From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Election Day 2016. Democrats had counted on a coalition of voters to help them win congressional elections, and certainly they did expect to win the White House. But as NPR has reported, something shifted under the Democrats' feet when it comes to Hispanic and Latino voters. Mitt Romney had won 27% of the Hispanic vote in 2012, and Donald Trump had campaigned with much harsher rhetoric about Hispanic populations. And yet Trump outperformed Romney, winning 29% of the Hispanic vote. As president, he has tightened up immigration policy while continuing to make a stream of comments, drumming up fear among white Americans that experts say is not based on statistical reality. And yet he is now in position to do even better with Hispanic voters in the next election, after family separation at the border and other issues. NPR, PBS, and Marist combined to do new polling and found that 41% of Hispanics now approve of President Trump's performance. Black Americans give him only 12% approval. Trump is not far behind the approval rating of President Obama at the same time in his first term. We're not going to make this entire hour political. It's not the point. But I open the hour with this snapshot because sometimes we oversimplify when we talk about so-called Latino issues or Hispanic issues. It's a diverse community with different ideas and priorities. And the Upstate Latino Summit moves to different cities each year. This time around, it's coming to Rochester. And the summit will focus on education, healthcare, government, and more. Here to explore these complex issues, our guests this hour include Hilda Rosario Escher, President and CEO of the Ibero-American Action League. Always nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And also with us is Julio Sáenz, who is now Chief Communications Officer of the Ibero-American Action League. And Julio, always nice to have you as well.
Great to be back.
I'm assuming both of you are listening to this intro thinking you're going to make this whole thing about politics. I'm not. That's not the point. The point is to help tell a story that there are diverse ideas, that it's not monolithic populations. And sometimes we do that in the media. Sometimes when we talk about the quote-unquote black vote, it's pretty monolithic when it comes to presidential elections or party politics. The evangelical vote is pretty monolithic. That is not true in Hispanic and Latino populations. It's much more diverse, and I think that's a good place to start. But Hilda, I'm wondering if you are surprised at the new PBS and NPR and Marist polling showing 41% job approval rating for this president among Hispanic voters. Does that surprise you at all?
They didn't ask me.
You weren't called.
No, I was not called. But yes, it surprises me. I really think that it's basically because a lot of Latinos have not been voting. And I think that that is a big issue. So you may have a certain population that votes, and that's why it shows, you know, a larger percentage. But this year, with the new number of Puerto Ricans that have relocated to United States, I bet you that you are going to see a different trend. At the agency, we have been very mindful of making sure that Puerto Ricans that are coming here, that they register to vote and that they vote, because in Puerto Rico, 89% of the population, they vote. So when they get here, is that they don't understand the system and they don't even know who's running. In Puerto Rico, it's very different because around election time, you have politicians going around with a bullhorn talking about what their agenda is. In here, you hardly hear about who's running and what are the issues. So, but this year, I think that even in this the primary, we already proved, you know, that there was a larger percentage.
Higher turnout.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was going to ask you why Puerto Rico has figured out this voting thing and our country on the mainland has not. But I will say this, Hilda, when you talk about Puerto Rican politicians kind of going around with a bullhorn, making themselves very accessible, very seen.
Exactly.
I will tell you, as a member of the media, it's very hard to get incumbents to come on a talk show or to be interviewed before elections. Incumbents suddenly get very busy. They've got lots of events. Their calendars are very busy. Time to debate? I would love to. I just don't have the time. So maybe that's part of the issue. But in Puerto Rico, if you have such a high voting percentage and voting participation, do you realistically think with the migration of some Puerto Ricans to the United States post-Hurricane Maria, you will see that line appear, or has it been a struggle? What's Ibero doing with that?
I think that, yes, we will have more Puerto Ricans going to the polls. I think that they have seen how our island has been treated, and they really are all about going out and voting. And then with the education that we have been providing, they will be going out to vote.
Let me read a little bit, Julio, from an article for Slate that came out yesterday by Leon Krause, who is a Hispanic journalist, who writes the following about turnout. And regarding Hispanic voter turnout in this country, whose phone is that? Is that Hilda? It's all the way on the other side of the room. It is so loud. How many times have you been in the studio? I'm hearing music in my head. I'm going, that's kind of nice. It's Hilda's phone. It's okay. By the way, my phone's rung many times.
I'm sorry.
No, it's totally fine. It's all good. It's all good. It's okay. Julio, let me read from Leon's piece in Slate regarding turnout, and I want to get your take on this. Here's what he writes in the piece for Slate yesterday. Quote, Latino voters make up about 12% of the American electorate, with more than 27 million eligible voters. Those numbers will continue to grow in the coming years. The question is whether Hispanic turnout will increase as well. So far, it doesn't look promising. At a national level, Hispanics have consistently registered lower turnouts than white, black, or Asian voters. As a matter of fact, more eligible Hispanic voters have decided to stay home rather than vote in every election since 1996. To make matters potentially worse, more than 40% of potential Hispanic voters are millennials, another dispirited demographic when it comes to voting. End quote. Are you more optimistic that things will start to change with participation among Hispanic Latino voters in this country?
Well, I think, first of all, here locally, regionally, where we've had the influx of folks from Puerto Rico, I do hope that we get a bump of folks that have moved here and are used to being politically engaged and active. So I do think I am optimistic here in the region, in the Northeast, where we've received so many folks, and in Florida, where so many folks have come from Puerto Rico. I think some communities in the United States feel disenfranchised. So I've lived in lots of parts of the United States. And I think if you take apart, like, my time in Miami, where Hispanics are so politically connected, I think there's three factors, because I've had to speak on this a few times, three factors that help down there that we don't have in the rest of the United States. One is success. I mean, nothing makes you want to come out and vote more than having seen results. And sometimes I think our folks here have gotten behind candidates and not gotten the results that we hoped, and that's discouraging. So Florida, I mean, it's, you have tons of elected officials who exert power. You see the results. People get more engaged. Second thing is, for a long time with the Cuban community in Florida, you had that one issue, that one rallying cry, which was get Castro out, that got people out. And I don't think we have that issue. I do think Trump, for some folks, has been an issue that has
galvanizing.
So I think we will see a bump because of that. You have that one rallying cry that gets people out to vote. And then the third thing I think that you see down in a place like Florida versus our area is that you have high concentrations. So in Rochester, we think we have like Latino neighborhoods, which we do, but our folks are really spread out all over the county. Whereas in Florida, you have a place like Hialeah that's 98% Hispanic. You're going to get more, you're going to have more success in the elections.
Okay. Well, let me read also a little bit from Leon's piece and then an email I got from a listener named Maria this morning. And then what we're going to do is we're going to lay out what's coming up in the Upstate Latino Summit, which is coming our way in just, what, 6 days? Is that right now? Is it next?
Yes, next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Next Wednesday. So from Leon's piece, Leon Krause's piece in Slate, He writes the following: it would seem reasonable to assume that after three uninterrupted years of demonizing, ostracizing, and persecuting the country's Hispanic immigrants, Trump and his nativist enablers would have hell to pay with Latinos at the ballot box come November and beyond. Trouble is, they might not. Hispanic voters have become a maddening puzzle for the Democratic Party. 2016 was supposed to be the year America's great demographic sleeping giant would finally awaken, shaken out of its slumber by Trump's rhetoric. Some predicted a massive "we have arrived" moment that would include a surge in voter registration and a dramatic increase in turnout at the polls. A Latino wave, an over-optimistic colleague told me, would come ashore and prove that Hispanic voters truly held the key to the White House. But it has not happened yet. Let me go ahead and read, that's from his piece. Let me read this email I got from a listener this morning who heard me talking to Beth Adams at 9:20 about this show, and she sent this email. Her name's Maria. She says, "Evan, I'm a proud Puerto Rican mother and grandmother. I'm also a conservative, but I am not a Republican. I know you are not talking about politics this hour, but I just want to tell you that it's difficult to be..." I'm sorry, let me make sure I'm reading your email. "Can I just tell you that it's difficult to be a conservative woman who is Puerto Rican? My mother raised me to take care of myself, not to rely on others or the government. I believe many people in the Hispanic community take that mindset. We have to. But right now, it's so hard hearing all the time that this president said this or that. One day, it's the Mexicans. One day, it's Puerto Rico. We're listening, but I think he doesn't care. But I think the Democratic Party takes us for granted, too. Does anyone care about us? Does anyone care about my values, my culture? Lastly, I believe in preserving our culture, but learning to speak English also and respecting American traditions. We can do both. Thank you for listening." It's an email from a listener named Maria. I saw you mouth the word wow, Julio.
I think that's a great summary of how a lot of Hispanics feel, that we have what we would say a slap to the face with something like the response to Hurricane Maria on the island. And then there's many Latinos that feel that the Democratic Party takes us for granted. And we do have a lot of traditional values that would make us more conservative. And once again, not to paint with broad strokes,
sure,
because we are not monolithic. But, I always think of Reagan's old quote from the 80s that, you know, Hispanics are Republicans. They just don't know it because we supposedly have, you know, the strong conservative tendencies. But we also are just, I think, looking for respect and access to the American dream. And that's where I can sense her frustration. I think she puts that together in a very succinct and powerful way.
Okay, Hilda?
And just so, if you look at the politics here, how many elected officials do we have? We are really not represented politically. We have a council member and we have a commissioner. And, you know, whenever we try to run, something happens and someone else runs and we don't make it. So it's that culture of invisibility. It's like, it's just taking us for granted, yes.
So let me ask you kind of further on that point. If the concern is when people of Hispanic background, Latinos and Latinas want to run, but something you say happens where you're prevented from running, is it that you're told, wait in line, it's not your turn, it's not your moment? I mean, what's actually happening?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely, yes. Or, you know, there isn't the support there from the party for us to run.
So how then, going back to Maria's email, if she feels, as a Puerto Rican woman in our community, taken for granted by the Democratic Party, how can a party claim to be the best party to help represent and advocate for causes and yet put up roadblocks to actual people of Puerto Rican, Hispanic, Latino descent from actually running and accumulating power? Can you do both? Is there something hypocritical there?
You want to respond to that?
You're both smiling at me saying, I didn't get invited here for this, but let's hit it.
Sure. Well, I would say that I don't think there's active barriers, What I think a lot of folks that are Hispanic that have tried to run for office, I think from both parties have faced, is a lack of broad support from the parties.
Yeah.
I've volunteered on a few campaigns, you know, family friends, childhood friends that have run. And most of the time, though, I mean, those have not always, but some of those have been Hispanic. And when I've been involved in those Hispanic, those campaigns for Hispanic American, all the volunteers are Hispanic. We don't have that broad support from the community. I don't want to try to figure out why, but that's what I've seen.
All right. And so the reason I read Maria's email and when I got it this morning, I thought, but this is really helps crystallize, at least in my mind, when I look at the polling, when I look at the numbers, the way that this community is not monolithic. So we're going to try to talk about the issues that will be prioritized at the summit next week, why those issues rise to the fore, while knowing that this is not a monolithic community and that there will be differences of opinion. But listeners, if you want to join the conversation, no matter your background, but particularly if you're in Latino and Hispanic community, 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Hilda Rosario Escher and Julio Sáenz are here from the Ibero-American Action League. And they're here because next Wednesday is the Upstate Latino Summit. And it's coming to Rochester. And it moves around, typically?
It does. It moves around. We had it here 3 years ago. It's supposed to be every 5 years. But because this is Ibero's 50th anniversary, I convinced my colleagues to let me have it. And not only that, it's my last summit since I will be leaving Ibero at the end of December, hopefully.
You're retiring?
I am not retiring. I'll never retire. I will be more involved in the community.
I sort of thought so. Okay. So you, Hilda threw some of her force of personality around and convinced them to come back here. And so it is next Wednesday, October 17th, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Rochester Riverside Convention Center. The theme of the 2018 Upstate Latino Summit is Power of the Past, Force of the Future. I'd like you both to tell me how you view that theme. I'll start with Julio.
Sure. I think the power of the past is that we do have a long history in upstate New York and in New York and in the United States. And so you have to take into account that we didn't just all get here. I think that's one of the things when I talk about Latino history and everything else, that's one of the key things that we have to remember. You know, here in Rochester, Latinos trace their history back to the 1880s. And then the force of the future is because we are still that that source of growing potential and untapped potential that I think is going to reshape a lot of the landscape in upstate New York and in the entire state.
Okay, Hilda?
Yeah, the way I see it is that we are over 5 million Latinos in the United States, and there is power in numbers. Now we can create a force again if we can all bound together and we can go and vote. And that's really important. We could be a force.
You can be a force. Well, that's what is a big theme here for this conference and this event. It's a one-day summit. Who's it aimed at? Who do you want to attend and how do you attend?
Sure. Let me just say that we'd like everyone to attend. This is not for just Hispanics, you know.
Absolutely.
I think it's for Latinos that want to know more about the community and different how we are involved in these different areas, how to interact with Latinos in the areas of education, human services, and business, and a bunch of other topics. So it's for Latinos, but it's also for non-Latinos who just want to know more about the community, how to get involved, how if you're a business, how do you market to Hispanics? How do you work with this community if you're a large institution? It's really a benefit to really anybody.
Okay. And it's 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. next Wednesday at the Riverside Convention Center. Online to get involved, or how do you make sure you're
signed up? The easiest thing is to go to Ibero's website, and the address is IAAL.org. Those are the initials of the organization, Ibero American Action League, IAAL.org, and you can actually register and pay right there on the website.
Joel is asking us just if we can clarify terms. I think that's a very fair point here. Clarify terms Hispanic, Latino, Latina, Latinx. Julio, it's very fair. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's one that we get asked quite a bit. I think most Hispanics don't mind being called Hispanic or Latino. It's not an offense to be called one or the other. Now, Hispanic comes from, you know, the Hispania, which is the, you know, the Roman province and the original, one of the original names for Spain, and that a lot of the cultures have those roots in Spain. So Hispanic was this catch-all term to just refer to people coming to the United States from Spanish-speaking countries. And then Latino, some people feel a little warmer too, because it's a phrase that most Hispanics, that most Latinos have used for themselves. And so it's a word we've come up and referred to each other as Latinos and Latinas for ages. And some people will say that Hispanic was a term created by the Census Bureau to capture all Latinos. And so there's a little bit more comfort among some people, whether Latino or Latina, which is male or female, versus Hispanic.
Okay. And Latinx is a term that you'll hear that is gender neutral.
Exactly. That's a that's a very new term just in the last few years that's popped up.
Okay.
I still use Latinos.
Yeah.
And do you prefer Latino to Hispanic?
I use it interchangeable.
Me too.
Okay. Yeah. So thank you for that. And Joel, thanks for the email on that. 844-295-TALK. If you want to join the conversation as we talk about issues that are impacting the Latino or Hispanic community here in Rochester, Western New York, the Finger Lakes, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Will you vote? Are you registered to vote? Has that changed in the past? Are you working in this community to help register? What have you seen, by the way, locally in terms of registration, and what does Ibero do with that?
So, you know that we have the multi-agency resource center. So every time that families come, together with our registration form, we have the registration for voting. I personally sit down with those families, and I talk to them about the registration process and the voting process. I talk to them about how things are here compared to the way they are in Puerto Rico. But in addition to that, we are very mindful of making sure that everyone in our agency and anyone that comes to work for us that are registered. So with our application for employment, there is also an application for registering to vote.
Can I read an email from Ray? And Julio, I'll kick this your way. Ray just says, Evan, this would be easier for everyone to vote, people in the Latino community and for all of us, if there were fewer barriers in New York State. I'm frankly embarrassed about how difficult it is, and now consider people who have either been forced to move here because of a hurricane or have chosen to move here, are learning a new language, learning a new neighborhood, and they have to find out when they have to register, all of the steps they can take. I can't tell you how discouraging it is when I work with people. They often give up and quit the process. We have so much work to do to make voting more accessible. That's from Ray.
And that's a big problem. And actually, I'm glad that he mentioned that, because there are a lot of barriers for our people. But basically, there are terms, there are dates when you have to register by this day. Mm-hmm. And not many people know what are the dates, you know. Once they are registered, okay, what do I do? What if I move? Things are not made easy here. So instead of people can just go and vote, do they have to register?
Well, at the very least, don't you think, when you look at, I mean, Julio, again, you've lived in different communities around the country, and it's different in a lot of places. At the very least, allowing registration closer to election day, or especially if you want to vote in primaries, there's so many things that do seem to be barriers, not to mention real tight hours
right
on primary and election day, questions about early voting, mail-in ballots, et cetera. I feel like I think Ray is making a very fair point.
It's a very fair point. And just to build on what Hilda said, on top of that, you just touched on it, you have these limited hours with like this last primary that have
noon.
That's you're talking about a lot of folks that are work blue collar jobs, sometimes two jobs, and it's hard for any of us to get out to vote. But now you're making it even more difficult for people who can't say to their boss, "Hey, I'm going to leave an hour early to go vote. I'm going to take my lunch, a longer lunch, and go vote." That's not an option for somebody who's clocking in and clocking out at a factory job.
And it's even difficult for families, you know, because they get out of work and then, okay, I got to go vote. But they have to a family that they have to tend to. So for me, I'm telling you, I'm all about everybody votes.
Yeah, a system that is almost automatic in terms of?
Absolutely.
Everyone should be
yes
registered by citizenship.
Absolutely.
Or by birth in this country.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you are, you know, in Social Security, the Social Security has your name and the DMV has your name, your register.
Is it a bridge too far for you, Hilda, to say that people should be required to vote?
Well, that is infringing in people's rights. So I would say. So,
in some ways, not voting is a choice. Not voting is a way to vote.
That exactly. But for me, when I'm talking to people, I'm telling them this is your right, and you're not using that mm-hmm. right. So consequently, then you have to accept whatever consequences come, like the one that we have now.
Okay. Do you think, Julio, people should be automatically registered or required to
vote? Well, they should be automatically voted to. Registered to vote, I don't think they should be forced. I think one of the things that would solve a lot of issues is if it was just a national holiday. That I think a lot of other countries where you see these amazing turnouts and the lines at the polls, it's because it's a day off. We take Black Friday off to go shop. We should have a day off to vote.
All right, so we've covered a good amount of ground on the voting side. I'm going to get our only break of the hour. I'm going to come back. We're going to talk about the 2018 Upstate Latino Summit, which is coming to Rochester 6 days from now. That's October 17th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. next week at the Riverside Convention Center, hosted by Ibero. And here from Ibero, Julio Sáenz and Hilda Rosario Escher are here. We're going to talk about some of the other subjects that are going to be coming your way, different sessions, different workshops going on next week, so we'll talk about those. They're bringing in speakers from around the state, so we'll have much more to discuss after our only break of the hour right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the power of protest movements and photojournalism, some remarkable and haunting images captured during social demonstrations in New York City. These images capture the pain and sometimes the progress in our country when it comes to race relations, police brutality, AIDS, queer activism, and more. We talk to photojournalists behind the images next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I can't help but wonder if when Hilda Rosario Escher hears the coverage of Hurricane Michael and they're dealing with the devastation down there on the Florida Panhandle as that hurricane now moves toward the Carolinas, I'm sure you're always thinking of Puerto Rico and Maria.
I do, and I tell you, every day I become more and more discouraged. Yes, because when there is a hurricane coming to any state, FEMA and the government are really right there. While in Puerto Rico, I was talking to my sister on Saturday, and she had been without electricity and without water for 3 days. So they are still having those issues. The other thing, and I don't want to go back to Hurricane Maria, but I have to tell you this. The other thing is that I was talking to my family, and in there is a storage in Puerto Rico, and they have millions of bottles of water that FEMA was paying and has been paying for storage, $250,000 a month. So someone is being rich out of the suffering of the people of Puerto Rico. When I went to Puerto Rico and so many people needed water, and there was the water being stored.
Let me get a phone call before we continue on with what's coming up at the summit next week. This is David in Rochester on line one. Go ahead, David.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Really good show. However, I take issue. I'm Dutch born. I'm a foreign born. I'm an American now. I take issue with the concept in this country of you want rights, but you don't want to exercise your responsibility that are commensurate with that right. This is basically what I'm talking about, voting. You know, you want the right to vote, but you don't want to take the responsibility that goes with that right to make, yeah, and that's what seeing what we have today. You know, the less people that vote, the more the outcomes are can be manipulated. I'll take the answer and the comment offline. Thank you.
Okay, David, thanks very much there. I mean, I think Hilda and Julio stated pretty plainly that they disagree with the idea that there should be required voting. But I think that maybe there's a middle ground between requiring voting by law or having some sort of a penalty or a fine for not voting and reframing the conversation at least by saying you have a responsibility to vote, that you know no one's going to fine you if you don't, but there should be. So and maybe that's where David is. Hilda?
And that is what I always preach to my community, you know. We are not forcing you to vote, but as a citizen, an American citizen, it is your responsibility to vote because a lot is involved. You know, you are giving power to a government that is going to decide how things are going to be for you. So you got to have that responsibility.
Okay. Julio?
Yeah, and I think voter apathy is an issue across all ethnic communities, all groups, and all demographics in the United States. Well, especially among younger folks, but it is a huge problem. And, you know, there's been a lot written about whether people just feel disenfranchised from the entire process. And one thing I see a lot of millennials talking about is this idea of it doesn't matter who you vote for, you know, because we're not going to win no matter what. And I think that's the bigger issue. And I think you see that more in a community like the Hispanic community, but it's a problem across the board in the United States.
David, thanks for the call. I would say goeiemorgen or goeiemiddag, if I'm remembering my Dutch correctly, and call anytime. I appreciate the phone call. Jim in Rochester is, okay. So let's do this. Before we get back to some of your phone calls, let's key in on what else is coming our way with the Upstate Latino Summit, because it is 6 days away. You can still register. Jump on Ibero's website online to do that. And there's a lot of different seminars and workshops, et cetera. So Julio, what is sort of the mission overall here when you start offering these different sessions? You want people in the business community. You want people in government, in healthcare, et cetera. How do you put it together?
So we do have a statewide committee that puts these together, that picks the topics and then works together to pull a diverse group of presenters. So for those of you that are thinking of coming, understand that this isn't just some of the same people you've seen from Rochester. We have people from Buffalo, from Ithaca, from Albany, from Syracuse, from all over coming. So you'll hear a diversity of opinions. And then the idea is most of the workshops are panel discussions, and so that we do have that representation from across the state. And there are some set questions at the beginning to get everything going, but then we encourage everyone in attendance to interact and ask questions and just get the conversation going. We were talking just a moment ago off air that I love the way that you brought up the fact that the Hispanic community isn't monolithic. And it's certainly not monolithic when it comes to opinions and ideas. And so what's great about this is that you do have this gathering of people from across the state. And this is a chance for folks from Rochester to interact and tap into that knowledge and be part of the conversation.
Okay. You mentioned marketing, for example. Businesses marketing to Hispanic populations. That's one idea. What are some of the other specific breakouts or themes that we're going to see?
Sure. So some of the ones that come to mind right away, just sticking in the business tract, is one is about barriers to Latino entrepreneurs. And that's a big issue. Rochester is actually, there's been a couple studies that show Rochester's last in the United States in Hispanic entrepreneurship, when we normally over-index tremendously in the rest of the country. And that's one of those problems that we talk about the summit being put together to deal with, because there are certain issues that are endemic in particular to the Hispanic communities in upstate New York. Rochester's dead last. Buffalo and Syracuse are not far behind in that study. Interestingly enough, we have the highest per capita income for Hispanics in the United States, according to the same survey. So there's other issues there that are unique to the area. Some of the other workshops just beyond economic development. We also have issues on education. So we have like a very interesting workshop that's going to be talking about the differences between public schools and public charter schools and how they deal with Hispanic students, getting students into college. So the Latino college pipeline, getting folks into schools, all these issues.
Okay. When it comes to education, Hilda, what do you see as the most significant? And again, these are hard questions to answer when we talk broadly about a Latino or Hispanic community in this country. But education, we in the city of Rochester, for example, we have a number of challenges for students who are picking up English as a second language, for example, trying to make sure that they are up to different standards by third grade, by seventh and eighth grade, et cetera. How do you see education as an issue here?
You know, and that is an issue. Education has been an area that we have been working and focusing on for years. And actually, we partnered with the Warner School of Education, and we did. They did a study about the Latino issues in the city school district and the dropout rate and the lack of achievement. And so we came up with some recommendations. But a lot of the issues is basically that lack of the bilingual classes not having a curriculum that is culturally appropriate, and also not having the parents engage. But that comes with being in a different culture and not really knowing the system, how it works. In the Latin countries, a parent can walk into a classroom and talk to the teacher whenever they want. Here is by appointment. And so that's lack of knowledge of the culture and how things are done here. But our kids experience a lot of different issues, the issue of safety, again, the language, not having the bilingual teachers that are needed to be able to deal with the students. So, you know, the way I see it is you have to mirror the population that you serve, and that doesn't happen here.
I see the phone ringing again. We'll get back to your phone calls in just a second. One of our listeners emailed me asking me on the subject of the question of learning English, which Maria in her email referenced. She said, as a Puerto Rican woman, she supports the idea of learning English, et cetera.
Absolutely.
There was a story recently, and I saw this video, and it didn't come to mind for this hour, but a listener reminded me of this video that went viral maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And Tiana Mañon sends me the summary from BuzzFeed. So let me just read this a little bit here, and I'll get our guest take, because I don't know if you guys saw the story. I thought the video was extraordinary. This happened in Rifle, Colorado, at City Market. So two women, Fabiola Velazquez and Isabel Marine, were shopping at the City Market there when they were stopped by another white woman named Linda Dwyer. Now, Dwyer asked Velazquez and Marine if they liked living in the United States, and then she told them they needed to learn English because the two women, the Latina women, were speaking to each other in Spanish, and the white woman didn't like it. Dwyer's confrontational tirade, however, was interrupted by a different white woman, Kamira Trent, who doesn't know anything about any of these women but overheard all of this and got in the middle and said that this is a free country. She could not tell the women how to speak. And then apparently Trent just decided that this other white woman was not going to back down. So she basically forced her down the aisle, and she got in her face and she said, "You do not have a right to attack Hispanic women. You do not do that. You know, you leave them alone, leave them alone." And the other woman, the white woman, is saying, "You know, we're losing our country. We're losing our country." So it was this ugly moment, but in some ways, I think it was an instructive moment for what being an ally means, because the two women, who I think are of Mexican descent, said they were felt really moved that another woman stepped in to say, look, you don't have the right, just because two women are speaking Spanish in a grocery store, to get in their face, to tell them that we're losing this country because of them. That is the kind of horrible stuff that pulls people apart, that it doesn't bring people together. Did you guys see the story? I'm wondering.
Yes, I did see that.
What did you think, Julio?
Well, I thought it was great that somebody like that stepped forward, and that's what we need, because anyone who tells you Latinos don't want to learn English is just trying to rile you up. I'm telling you right now, if someone tells you that, hey, Latinos don't want to learn English, somebody's trying to get you to generate some hate, okay? Because that's not true. All Hispanics are trying to learn English. We're just at different stages, because we do have people that are still arriving. We have people that have been here hundreds of years.
So the learn English thing is provocative.
Absolutely. That's all that's meant to be, because even bilingual education, all bilingual education is saying, hey, while you learn English, don't fall years behind in math and in history and in geography. So we're going to help you keep learning in those areas at your current level in the language you already speak, so you don't fall years behind. But you're still learning English.
Hilda, I know you said you hadn't seen that video yet. I'll be very curious after the show to hear your take on seeing it. But it's hard seeing these moments where someone is just going to assume that just because they hear another language being spoken, that number one, whoever's speaking that language can't speak English, and number two, if they can't, that they're not trying or that they're indifferent. And I wonder how you feel about that.
Well, that's correct. You know, not because we speak with someone else that speaks Spanish in Spanish, that doesn't mean that we don't speak English. You should see Arivero. We have classes that are full of Latinos that want to learn English, and we don't have enough classes. So for me, I take offense when people say Latinos don't want to learn English. That's incorrect. And you know something? It's more powerful to speak Spanish and to speak English than just speaking English. You know, we enrich this culture with the different languages.
Yes, damn right. Go ahead, Julio.
I was going to say, it's always been a part of the United States. People so quickly forget there were German newspapers, there were German schools. Lawrence Welk, who I believe we still show that show on XXI. I love Lawrence Welk.
Yes.
I grew up with it. Lawrence Welk, that German accent he has, he was born in Wisconsin or in Minnesota. He was born in the United States. He grew up speaking German because that's what the German immigrants that he grew up with did. And guess what? It didn't hold him back, and it's been part of the United States our whole lives. People retain some of the language because it means a lot to the retainment of their culture.
Well, there are political races, and we'll get into this in later programs as we get toward the election, in which if a candidate speaks other languages, it's being used against them. What kind of anti-intellectual stuff is going on here when that's used against them? Also, I would just say to Linda Dwyer, who was giving these women a hard time in the store in Colorado, every day, cada día, yo quiero practicar mi español con mis amigos de los países donde la gente habla español. It's important for me to keep trying. So if you hear that, too bad. But I don't want to be insensitive to the experience of immigrants who feel differently. And I know it's difficult, but I think Julio is making a strong point. When you hear someone say, speak English, that's not constructive.
No.
That's meant to be judgmental. It's meant to be destructive. It's meant to be divisive. It's meant to be provocative. But there's a conversation to be had about the value of different languages. So, okay. Thank you for that email as well. Dan in Brighton, we got to keep it quick here. Go ahead, Dan.
First of all, I grew up in an immigrant community that passed as Caucasian, and we frequently spoke our native language. It helped us adjust. But my real question is, do you all consider Brazilians Latinos, even though they don't speak Spanish? They speak Portuguese.
We do.
Yeah. I think in a lot of the events that we have, they're included in a lot of things. Even though they speak Portuguese, it's Latin America. A lot of the culture is the same, and the language is just a bit different.
Okay. Andrew in Irondequoit is next. Go ahead, Andrew.
I was surprised that the 41% approving of Trump statistic you put out there, Evan.
Yeah, there's a second poll that has it at 35, but it's, you know, so if you average them, it's in the high 30s. But yeah, yeah.
That's just surprising. I know that generally speaking, if you want it to be like that, a lot of people like to work, and Trump is business friendly. So maybe that explains it.
I don't think he's that business friendly, but go ahead.
You don't think he's that business friendly?
No, I mean, he's been a very bad businessman in his career.
Well, he's
terrible at business.
I'm not saying he's a good businessman. He probably isn't. I don't know.
No, he's definitely not.
But business friendly meaning less taxes and less regulation.
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, I take the point there that that there is a framework in, at least in big corporate America's mind, that the GOP is going to be less onerous, Democrats more so. I understand that framework exists, and that right now with the Republican in the White House, a lot of corporate leaders feel more comfortable. They feel their tax burden will be lower. They feel more comfortable to hire. I take all of that point. How do you see that relating to the question for Hispanic Americans?
Well, I was just commenting that this kind of surprise. Well, I think, I mean, maybe more business friendly. You know, small business likes less taxes and less regulation too, because they're hit harder by that than big corporations.
Yeah, it's interesting. And Andrew, thank you for that. I guess I'm going to kick it over to Julio and Hilda based on Andrew's comment there. There's a lot of ways that you could look at why, you know, Latinos and Hispanics would be naturally more progressive and naturally more conservative. Maria's email tells us she always considered herself self-reliant, and she's proud of that. And that is a very powerful and, frankly, an American ideal that I don't think conservatives have a monopoly on. But at the same time, there's a lot of sort of conservative fabric wrapped up in that idea. And then there's a question of the collective. And certainly the people of Puerto Rico have exemplified this better than any other Americans recently, I think, the way they came together post-Maria, the power of the collective, looking out for one another. And you see communities, whether it's celebrations and festivals, et cetera, where that collective spirit is there. So I think there's good reason to think that people of Hispanic and Latino backgrounds would be all kinds of different political ideologies, and I'm frankly not surprised to see it's not a monolith when it comes to American politics. Right. Fair enough?
But I do think Hilda and I look at each other in disbelief, and I do think because the Hispanic community is, it's very intricate, I don't know if maybe there's some skewing in that data.
So you're thinking that the actual number of support's lower?
If
you're guessing.
I do. My anecdotal guess would be that it's a lot less.
Okay. Hilda?
Yeah. I believe that it's a lot less. I'm really surprised. But I think that those results are skew.
And just to kind of put a final point out, because I didn't mean to be snarky with Andrew about Trump in terms of business, just read the New York Times recent piece. Extensive piece, 12-month investigation into the tax history of Donald Trump and his father. I mean, Donald Trump has shown that a great way to end up with $100 million is to start with $500 million. He's lost a lot of money. He needed $400-plus million from his father, not $1 million, not $10 million, $400-plus million, much of it criminally sort of set up in a way that it's probably past the statute of limitations, but it's stuff that I couldn't get away with. So it's not very impressive. His business record is not very impressive. But in terms of his policy, I understand why people like Andrew say, hey, his policy is outwardly friendly to big business. I take that point. So let's let our guests kind of start to wrap it up a little bit here. We've got the Upstate Latino Summit coming up next Wednesday, October 17th, at the Rochester Riverside Convention Center from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. We've covered a lot of ground here. Julio, what have we missed here? What stands out to you that you're excited about that we kind of didn't get to? We get sidetracked. Every time we come here, we always get sidetracked.
Well, it's good. Great conversations. No, I would just say that it's just a really exciting opportunity. You did mention this is something that only comes to Rochester every few years. So it's a unique opportunity for people to get a great background on the Hispanic community, whether you're Hispanic or not, and in all kinds of fields. So regardless of what the career that you're in, it's a great opportunity to come and learn a lot.
Okay. Hilda, what are you most excited about?
The other thing that we didn't speak about is the why we started a summit here in the different upstate city. And that was because we saw that in New York City, there was this conference, big conference, and they continuously ignore upstate. They didn't think that there was any Latinos in upstate. So we came together to bring the whole upstate together to discuss our issues, because in some way they are different than the ones downstate.
How many people are you expecting next Wednesday?
Oh, well, maybe 600 people. So
we have a luncheon, our annual luncheon and 50th anniversary. So we have over 600 people. And then there are some individuals that will be going just to the workshops,
okay,
to the summit.
And 30 seconds, any people who are coming specifically or any names you want to mention who are going to be here, some of the leaders or at least the sectors in the community?
Well, we have like lots of business owners from across the state. It's really hard to say because we have over 35 speakers. Mm-hmm. So it's just people from the entire. I'm very proud of how inclusive we are with having people from across upstate New York.
We also, and I forgot to mention, that the city of Rochester is hosting this event with us. So the mayor will be there and the different politicians will
okay.
be there.
Online where? One more time. Julio.
IAAL.org.
IAAL.org. That's Ibero-American Action League. Julio Saenz, Hilda Rosario Escher. Always nice to see you and have this conversation, and thank you. And I know we'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The summit next Wednesday in Rochester. Short break, more connections coming up.